The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network,
the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Hello, Bob here with this week's Bubble Genius Showcase item of the week. The holiday season is just around the corner, so it's time for Bubble Genius's Can't Catch Me Gingerbread Man Soap. A big chunk of gingerbread that you can enjoy without it going right to your thighs. Unless, of course, you're washing your thighs, that is. Scented with a yummalicious gingerbread fragrance, all the decorations are soap also. And at almost 5 ounces, this soap should last you a good long time. Only $7 at BubbleGenius.com. But if you use our promo code Bob and Chez, that's BOBANDCHEZ, you'll get 15% off your entire order only at BubbleGenius.com. And now let the cartoons begin.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
In my day, we didn't have these thin latex condoms so you could enjoy sexual pleasure. In my day, there was only one kind of condom. You took a rabbit skin and wrapped it around your privates and tied it off with a bungee cord. And you couldn't feel nothing. And half the time, you didn't even know if your partner was there. And we used the same one over and over again. Because we were ignorant morons. Just a bunch of hairless head kebabs standing around with rabbit skins on our dinks. And that's the way it was. And we liked it.
Coming or going, you can be radioing. Radio is everywhere.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is Thursday, November 12, 2015, and this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I am Bob Seska. That is Chez Pazienza sitting right there.
Yo.
Brought to you every week by, or every show, every week. I'm still thinking we're only doing one show a week. Two shows a week. Every show is brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. It's the best soap in the world. Also brought to you by the Bowen Law Group and attorney Charles J. Bowen. Head over to thebowenlawgroup.com/Bob and Chez for free legal advice, where all you have to do is click the link on the podcast page. If you don't see it on the podcast page, go to bobseska.com, scroll down a little bit, look to the right, you'll see a picture of Charles Bowen talking on a telephone, on an old-timey telephone. Just click on that. That's all you need. Okay, so we're going to hustle through the show today. The post-mortem show for our Patreon people might be a little short because Chez is participating in Happy Hour. Chez participates in Stephanie Miller Show Happy Hour.
I am participating in panel.
Yep. By the way, I completely forgot to plug the best of the Stephanie Miller Show Happy Hour Volume 2, which is now number 2 on the Billboard comedy charts. Number two, yeah,
awesome.
And
by the way, that reputation, it's going to tank as of this afternoon because I'm awful and I have nothing to add.
Oh, that's not true. I
think they learned everything they possibly could about me last time around. Now I'm just going to stick my thumb in my ass.
I really don't think so. I think they only skimmed the tip of the iceberg on that.
You know, I actually think that's why Deus Ex Malcontent finally kind of wound down, is I think I just ran out of stories to tell about myself.
By the way, the iceberg, made of cocaine. Clarify that. They're going to talk about a lot of stuff. I mean, your first happy hour, I mean, this will be your second happy hour. That's a big deal. I've only done one happy hour.
I enjoy it. It's fun. Well, I happen to be local, so.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So you're going to go, you're going to participate in panel, and you're going to be hammered? Are you going to try to be hammered before the happy hour starts? Or just
No, I'm going to try to be, because I'm staying for the quote-unquote after party afterwards, but I'm going to try to keep it somewhat under control because I'm going to another show tonight. I went to Kendrick Lamar last night, and I've got a ride tonight. So I'm going, Taryn's going to be there, and afterwards we're all going over to Jones, so I don't want to have started drinking really heavily at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well, I'm fully anticipating my ears burning between the hours of 4 and 5. Because, I mean, it was like the first happy hour you did, like the first 5 minutes is talking about nothing except me. It was just like all, like, hey, okay, now he's not here. Let's talk about Bob. And surely you're going to talk about the fact that on Wednesday morning, Stephanie Miller show, for only the second time in 2 years, I used the S word on the air.
Wow.
Which is fine
you
if it was...
Say you know, we're adults.
I know. We can say that on a podcast, but since the Stephanie Miller show is still radio, it's still forbidden. Somehow...
They're not on a delay?
Yeah, well, yeah, they are. They're on a 7-second delay. But that what made it worse is that Stuttering John... I still can't believe that I'm referencing the Stephanie Miller show and Stuttering John now.
Yep.
But Stuttering John, who's taking over for Chris Lavoie, was still kind of learning the board. And Chris hadn't shown him where the dump button was.
The dump button, awesome.
So I had this prepared joke that I was going to tell about Stuttering John stepping in for Chris Lavoie. Something about, you know, now he has to sign up for Gold's Gym, and he has to get a subscription to our show so he can comment on it on the Stephanie Miller show. Right. And I started to go down the path of this joke right out of the shoot, right at the beginning of this segment. I started to say S-load. And I caught myself after the, just too late. Before I got to load, I said the S word. And then, of course, there was the big scramble to dump it. And they did. But, of course, I'm sitting there going, what the F is wrong with me? I mean,
did you say that out loud? That would have really been awesome because then they couldn't dump it.
No, I just yelled, damn it. I just went, damn it.
Yeah, because then they couldn't dump it.
It's like the worst. I mean, I've been doing radio in some form or another for 25 years. You think, okay, at some point, I'll figure it out. Like, oh.
No. That's nonsense.
Okay.
It is. If you're on a show where you feel, and this is why this happens on TV news all the time and on the radio. When you're on a show that you're used to being on and you feel comfortable, it's so easy to screw up.
Right.
It's because you honestly forget. You forget that, like, you know, you can be. I've seen people sitting in studios with cameras pointed at them. And it's, you know, when you're kind of shooting the ironically.
And there you go.
Pardon the pun. you know, when you're shooting the back and forth with somebody, you can forget. You know, it's just, you know what, I'm just sitting here talking to somebody. And it totally slips your mind that you're on the air live.
Well, here's my theory as to why I did this. And again,
you have a theory.
I have a theory. I was thinking about this after actually doing it. Because, of course, the way I'm wired, I dwelled on that for, like, the subsequent 36 hours. Like, I'm sitting here going, damn it! Why did it... And so I thought back to before I started the segment, I wanted to write up something on Facebook. Because it was my last segment with Chris Lavoie as the producer of the show.
Right.
So it was like, I was trying to think of something meaningful to say about Chris and post it on Facebook. And so... as part of that, I was thinking of the first time, which must have been within the first, I don't know, month. I started doing the Stephanie Miller show as a weekly regular in August of 2013. So it was right within that first maybe 3 weeks that I inadvertently, I think again, I said the S word and Chris had to dump it. And I wanted to put a reference to that saying like, and in all this time, I've only forced Chris to use the dump button once. You know, some remark about that I was thinking about putting into the Facebook post, and I didn't do it. But my mind was on that. And I think in a way, I kind of jinxed myself, or I psyched myself into it, and then it just rolled out of my mouth. The other thing is I blame you.
Sure.
I blame
right,
Chiz.
Yeah, thanks.
Because we're kind of, I mean, even though our show does get broadcast, I think, on the radio... we still use profanity on this show, and I just go through and take the time after the show to
bleep it. Good that you weren't thinking of, like, you know, some very important expose that you've done before on child rape.
So I said, yeah, I've raped a child. Oops!
Child
damn
rape.
Damn it! God awful. All right, so we've got a lot to get to on the show today, our Thursday show. I want to talk a little bit about the... Fox Business Republican debate. I want to talk about the latest from Mizzou from the University of Missouri.
Turd that was.
Oh, yeah, that debate.
What a predictable turd that was.
It really was. And all you need to know about that debate is based upon Trump's reaction after the debate. Spent about 24 hours going around every microphone he can get in front of and saying, you know, it was an elegant debate. So the fact
now you
that
gotta
Trump,
remember, though, this is a man who thinks that elegant is a giant gold building.
Yeah, like a gold-plated glass building. You know, something that looks like you should be doing cocaine off of it. That's elegant to Trump. So naturally, the takeaway is that the debate was basically just a big ass-kissing session. And I think it's also indicative. It's certainly Fox Business is more friendly to the Republicans than, say, CNBC or CNN. But the fact is that it's obvious that the Republicans, after the CNBC debate, effectively bullied the press into not asking anything serious.
Of course.
So consequently, you get Trump saying, oh, it was an elegant debate. It was a terrific debate. It was so elegant, your head will explode and then turn into piss and vinegar. Or whatever the hell he says all the time. That's really all you need to know. They're just now, they're just going to be deferential for the rest of the debates. That's what we can kind of gather.
I really hope not, because these people are clowns. And I genuinely hope that every opportunity they are called out for it. Because like we talked about on Tuesday,
yeah,
they're above and beyond their personalities. They're kind of lunatic personalities. You know, you're talking about people whose policies just don't make any sense.
Right.
So, yeah, you know what? They again, you're running for the highest office in the land. You deserve to be called out.
Well, the fact is that Rand Paul, of all people, was the most reasonable and sensible participant in that debate. And again, that's another thing. That's all you need to know about the discourse that's happening on the Republican side, is that when Rand Paul is the most reasonable member of the Republican Party, or at least the most reasonable member of the Republican candidates for president, that's a problem. I mean, I would say, you know, John Kasich's up there.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But at least Rand Paul had the nerve to say, hey, you know what? You know, in his vocal fry voice, you know what? A no-fly zone in the Middle East would basically just precipitate World War III.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, we've got Putin flying flying sorties in the area where the rest of the Republicans and, quite honestly, Hillary Clinton wants us to put a no-fly zone.
Right.
So what happens? Do you think Putin's going to acknowledge the no-fly zone? Of course he's going to fly sorties through that no-fly zone. There's going to be bombing missions right into there. And that's going to put us in another war. And then it's going to be another major war where Iraq is the central theater, and now the Russians are going to be involved.
Yeah, that's just death on a stick.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's something that if the Republican candidates for president all pulled up their children as potential draftees, then fine, go for it. Let's see what happens then. Yeah. But I don't think anyone, I mean, anyone who was watching that debate going, yeah, you know what? Another good idea. Another war in Iraq. Let's get back in there. And this time, let's go to war in Iraq against the Russians and see how that works out. But that, I mean, that was Rand Paul calling that out, and I think rightfully so. Even though, you know, the chances are that sometime within the subsequent 48 hours, he changed positions because he flip-flops on everything. Rand Paul is just a serial flip-flopper. But I don't think, I mean, this is something that he's been pretty firm on. I think he's been pretty solid on being against the no-fly zone in the area. I mean, quite frankly, as we've said from the beginning, not to get too tangential about this, but we shouldn't be over there in the first place.
Right.
Just let them figure it out. Now, as soon as ISIS steps beyond that boundary of their theater of operations, then we need to do something, obviously. But right now, I just don't see it being a rational approach to not only get into another fighting war over there, but then to also get into a fighting war against the Russians. All right. But and then the other thing that was just inexplicable to me. Again, this is the sort of thing that we were talking about after the CNBC debate, with nonsense ideas where they're basically creating issues and then coming up with nonsense solutions to these ridiculous issues.
Right. Yeah.
The one that we got from the Fox Business debate was from Marco Rubio. Somehow there's a glut of philosophers in the United States. We have way too many philosophers in the United States and not enough welders.
So you know what we should do? We should build a wall around the West Village, and ship them all back to wherever they came from.
Yeah,
ship them all back to you know, Greece.
Ship them back to Greece. Exactly. That's what we need to do. I mean, again, it's like where did he get this? Why are we suddenly talking about an issue that involves too many philosophers and not enough welders.
It's just, wow.
That's not even remotely, I mean, if you were to create a list of the 1,000 most pressing issues, once you get down to around 900, 950, you're kind of in the weeds. It doesn't really, those issues don't really matter. But I mean, too many philosophers and not enough welders. That's not even on the list. That's something for all of the mouth breathing morons who support these idiots are going, yeah, too many philosophers, not enough welders. But of course, there are many, many welders, not many philosophers.
Right. Yeah. No, trust me, America is not a philosophical kind of place.
I mean, Matt Iglesias had to put together an infographic, right? This is what happens. They create nonsense issues, and then everyone has to swat it down. So there's Matt Iglesias trying to come up with an infographic to illustrate that there are indeed many, many welders in the United States, in the hundreds of thousands, and maybe philosophers in the four figures. You know. But Marco Rubio presents this as if it's a big problem. I mean, he's talking about every time he talks about education. So, well, there's not enough vo-tech anymore. I don't think that's the problem.
Dude, you know what? Rubio's from Florida, and every 3 seconds on local television in Florida, there's a commercial for like a tech school.
That's
it's
right.
Real big there. You know why? Because nobody there has a fucking education. That's why.
Yeah. But I mean, I mean, I don't know.
In the middle of Maury, just before you find out whether he is the father, you get, are you tired of laying on your couch like a lazy ass like you're doing right now watching Maury? Well, guess what?
Yeah, that's right. Sign up for Lincoln.
Come be a dental assistant.
Remember Lincoln Tech? Does Lincoln Tech still exist, or has that been absorbed by University of Phoenix?
I have no idea.
But I mean, I don't think there's any lack of plumbers. I mean, if you want to call a plumber to come by and fix your toilet, you can pretty much get a plumber the same day. Well, whatever. See, here we are. We've stepped into the trap.
This.
We're talking about it. It's just dumb. We're going to take a break here in a second. When we come back, we're going to talk about Lindsey Graham's wine-guzzling debate-watching party.
Oh, so awesome. I love Miss Lindsey.
Strength.
Lots of strength in that wine. Plenty of strength. It's a strong wine.
Served to him by his manservant, Raul.
Strength.
Plus, some Ben Carson news. Ben Carson talking about free college destroying the nation. And speaking of college, we want to get...
I can't believe we've got another year of these idiots.
I know, seriously. Plus, speaking of education, I want to get the latest from University of Missouri. You've been covering that issue almost exclusively for the Daily Banter. And today was another stellar day.
Wow, yeah.
Protests.
Yeah.
Did you see? I'm sure you saw what we're going to cover that in a little bit. Plus, oh, God. Insufferable douchebag Jesse Waters... in the news this week because, well, we'll get to that. Jesse Waters being promoted within Fox News Channel. That'll be really, really exciting. Plus, Trump actually criticizing Hillary Clinton's hair.
Yeah, shocking. Just shocking.
Yeah, big example of irony. We're going to take a break and come back with more show right after this. Okay, let's talk Patreon. In case you're just joining us, we're rallying all of our listeners to sponsor our little podcast here. And if we reach our crowdfunding goal, we'll give you new full-length shows every weekday. Meanwhile, if you pledge $1, $5, $10, or $15 per month, you'll not only help finance the show, but you'll also get Patreon-only rewards, such as our post-mortem show, our drunken after-party podcast, and for $15 per month, you'll get all of that, plus a commercial-free, unbleeped version of our full-length Tuesday and Thursday shows. If everyone listening right now pledged just $1 a month, that's 12 cents per show, we'd far exceed our goal. Go right now to patreon.com/Bob and Chez. That's patreon.com/Bob and Chez. Thank you for your support.
Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Welcome back to our Thursday show. Thank you for joining us each and every episode.
He was born on a summer day in 1951.
All right. So, you know, if I had
Hold on. Breaking news.
What's going on?
We were just talking about it. This is the thing that made me sort of laugh cry there before we went to break.
About University of Missouri?
No, actually not that. Ben Carson. if Russian planes violate a no-fly zone, quote, shoot them down. And you know what actually that one comment tells you so much more than anything else he said about what kind of president he would be and what he would mean for the country. That fucking moron would get us into World War III.
World War III. And I thought he was going to prevent the end times. Didn't he say he was going to stop God from creating the apocalypse?
I think he's already realized that there's no stopping the apocalypse. There's no stopping Armageddon. It's Jesus's will.
I mean, why the hell?
Do you have any idea what happens if we get into a shooting war with Russia?
They don't hear themselves. And yes.
No, they do hear themselves. Ben Carson is legitimately crazy. I mean, legitimately fucking insane.
Yeah, he is insane.
He has this massive, massive ego.
God complex.
Yeah, this God complex. Yep. And he genuinely believes that he can do no wrong. And I think he believes that Jesus will protect us. Jesus will, kind of like that painting where Ben Carson was sitting at the right hand of Jesus. We could just shoot down fighter jets, Russian fighters.
That's right. And then just say to Putin, sit down and shut up. This is the Republican foreign policy.
No, that's what would happen if Putin went to Yale or Mizzou.
Yeah.
You're a white guy. Sit down. Shut up.
And by the way, have you noticed the Republicans are now rolling out the campaign against the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau?
I didn't see that.
There was an ad that ran during the debate on Fox Business Channel against the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which is arguably the best thing that came out of Dodd-Frank, which is this agency where the sole task is to prevent consumers from being taken by lending schemes. And so now this is bad. This is bad. Carly Fiorina was speaking out against it too, almost as if she knew that there would be an advertiser during the debate where they're basically making Elizabeth Warren's face is all over the thing, right? They've got Elizabeth Warren as basically like the 1984 overseer, the communist overlord.
Big brother.
And yeah, exactly. And then showing government bureaucrats rejecting one middle class loan after another, like all these loan applications, this guy stamping them rejected, rejected, rejected. Like the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is making sure that no Americans can get loans. What they're doing is making sure that no Americans will be taken, had by ridiculous predatory lenders.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's not like you can still go out and get a loan. You can still go out and get a credit card, but you're not going to be, it's going to be more difficult for lenders to screw you when you get that loan. That's the point of the CFPB and what Elizabeth Warren helped to found and helped to create. But now this is something that has to be stricken with everything else. They just, you know what? They really, going back to the Russia thing, they want to roll everything back to pre-regulation, to, basically the 80s. The Reagan's 80s, where regulation was dismantled, war on the middle class declared, and Soviet Russia was the enemy. Nice. And that's exactly where the Republicans want to go. It's no wonder why they continue to cite Reagan every other goddamn word. Yeah, I want to take a step before we move along with stuff that I actually had written down for us to talk about today. Just want to take a second about that. I don't know if you saw the latest police video with the taser.
Which one?
This guy was tasered 20 times.
Wow. No, I didn't see that one.
MSNBC got its hands on this video. And obviously, it's a black guy. Three cops tasered this guy 20 times, even though he was basically kaput about halfway through. Mm. And they ended up killing him. He ended up dying.
That makes sense.
At one point, they brought him to the hospital because he's been tasered too many times. And so
his heart is basically stopped.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's handcuffed behind his back, manages to break out of the or get out of the car, and he's running toward the hospital, like toward the emergency room doors, with his hands handcuffed. And then they taser him again. They get him back in the car and he's slumped over and they start tasering him again.
Wow.
I mean, over and over and over again. The guy is saying, why are you killing me?
Where did this happen?
I was just standing there watching the report about it last night on Lawrence O'Donnell. And I'm going, what the Richmond. Hell?
Richmond, Virginia.
Richmond, Virginia. There you go. And eventually died. So, this is one of those cases where they're using the taser almost like a leash to a guy. And they tasered him again after they not only had him handcuffed, but then they shackled his legs together and still tasered him after that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen anything quite like that, where it was really, really upsetting
to watch.
I mean,
look, there's a reason that they have less than lethal weapons. Mm-hmm. But less than lethal is not just, we can use it for anything.
Yeah.
In fact, they're supposed to, I hope that these cops went through it, they're supposed to taser you in the academy. They're supposed to taser cops so that they have an idea what it is that it feels like, so that they don't just do like, I'm just going to fucking hit this guy 12 times. He'll be fine. You know, because they fucking hurt like hell.
Yeah, they do. I mean, not only is it electricity being jolted through your body, but the way a taser works is it shoots like a fish hook that stabs into your skin with a barb and sticks in your skin, and then through the wire attached to the taser handle, that's how it delivers the electricity.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, I mean, yes, less than lethal in the sense that if you feel like you're really in danger and you for whatever reason can't or don't want to shoot someone, yeah, it's a fine weapon.
Yeah.
But no, that's not something that's not a fallback. That's not your first resort. Okay, well, screw it. We're just going to do that.
Yeah. And, I apologize for not having the story here in front of me. I didn't actually plan on talking about it, but as I was thinking...
It's Richmond. I just...
The family of a Richmond man who died after he was shocked with a taser by police released a police video of the incident. The video showed Linwood Lambert, who died in May of 2013, being tasered outside an emergency room in South Boston, Virginia. Lambert's family has since filed a $25 million wrongful death lawsuit. Several videos recorded both inside and outside the police cruiser show what happened as South Boston police transported the 46-year-old man to the hospital. The officers first encountered Lambert after responding to several 911 calls from people complaining about his behavior at a motel. When police arrived, they handcuff him and put him in a squad car. An officer can be heard telling Lambert they were not going to lock him up, but rather take him to the emergency room. You can hear another officer calling the hospital, asking to speak to the mental health caseworker on duty. Things take a dramatic turn when the officers and Lambert arrive at the emergency room. There, Lambert kicks the window of the police car. An officer tells Lambert to stop and calm down. When the officers try to get Lambert out of the car, the man attempts to run away. By the way, this article is not entirely clear. He attempts to run into the hospital.
Right.
He's not attempting to run down the street or something
like
that.
Has he been hit? He hasn't been hit yet.
Yeah, he's already been tasered.
Oh, he has been tasered.
Yeah, okay. but he's also handcuffed. Like, his hands are behind his back. What the hell is he going to do? Strangle someone with his hands behind his back?
Yeah.
That is when police... Oh, yeah, okay. That's when police hit him with the taser. At some point, Lambert suffers...
Which is just, you know what? That's lazy.
Yeah, it is.
Because honestly, you know what? If somebody takes off, they got their hands cuffed. You know what your job as a cop is to do? Go get him.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Don't turn around and hit him with a taser. Run after him.
Run after him.
You attack him. That's what you do.
Exactly. You're trained to apprehend these guys without having to use the cheap cop out of tasering someone who doesn't need to be tasered.
Right. And once you get him, unless he tries to bite you, there's very little he can do to you.
Yeah. At some point, it says
you've got him at a very serious advantage because he's freaking handcuffed. That's just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. So they
lazy, stupid police work.
The autopsy said the guy died from a cocaine overdose, but the guy who performed the autopsy didn't know that he had been tasered 20 times.
How did he not know? I mean, I'm just curious. How did he not know that? He would have seen marks. That's very odd.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. At least the attorney for the family is saying
that's
the attorney for the family's point of view.
This will all come out in court.
Yeah, of course. But I mean, just for God's sake, what the hell is going on? I mean, do they not know? And again, this is 2013, so it was a little bit before the public outcry that occurred over the last 2 years. But still, you have to know that at some point this stuff is going to be made public. And that it looks terrible for the cops. On top
they're doing it in front of a hospital emergency room door. Not like there's a camera there.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, if you want to see something horrifying, go watch the video. It's all over now. MSNBC was able to get a copy of it from the family. Unbelievable. just breathtaking.
You know,
I mean, it's very seldom that I'm actually watching a news story and I start yelling at the TV, because what I do for a living is helps to prevent me from yelling at the TV every night. So I can actually vent through my job by writing things. But last night it was just I was like, what the F is going on?
I could just totally see you, like, if you didn't do this for a living, like at Trader Joe's, just ranting at people.
Well, what's
I said I wanted the sea salt caramel bar.
Ted Cruz is an a-hole. Just like randomly shouting at people.
I could absolutely see that.
But I would do it in 140 characters or less still. All right, so we're going to take another break and come back and continue with the things we had planned to talk about after a short break back after this. Hey, folks, Bob here. Unlike the neck-bearded millennials, I shave every damn day. And for the last few weeks, I've been using Harry's shaving products, and I'll never go back to the stores for blades or ever pay those prices again. The Harry's razor fits in my hand and it fits my face. It's a quick and comfortable shave with really smooth results. See, Harry's was started by a couple of guys who passionately wanted to make shaving a better experience. In the process, they bought a German factory that's been making these engineered blades for 100 years. That means no more middleman, no more middleman prices. The blades come straight from that factory at factory prices. Now you can get a Harry's starter kit for just $10 if you use the code RELM, R-E-L-M, when you go to harrys.com. That's the razor, a month's supply of blades, and a lathering gel so thick you'll swear it's a dessert topping. And a little travel case to keep your blade fresh on the road. Say goodbye to choosing between expensive brands or cheap disposables. And say hello to Harry's. High-quality blades at a price you'll love. Go to harrys.com right now and enter the code RELM at checkout to get $5 off your first purchase. Get a month of great shaves for just $10. Use the code RELM at harrys.com. That's HARRYS.com.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go.
Harry.
Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Okay, holiday season coming up. If you're starting your shopping now, by the way, Thanksgiving, for God's sake. Thanksgiving, 2 weeks away. 2 weeks from today. So you better get started. You better hurry. I can't wait to start playing those jingles because I know you love them so much.
Yes. I f***ing hate it.
Only 20 days left. You better hurry. Second half of today's show is brought to you by the BobSeska.com Amazon link. Do all of your shopping at Amazon.com and make sure to go through our link to get there. If you shop at Amazon, enter the site using our link. It's just below the logo at BobSeska.com, and we get a small commission for everything you buy. It costs you nothing and helps support the show. Thank you, especially at the holidays. Okay, so, all right. University of Missouri. Yeah. I don't know if this will... if this will be confined to a single segment, it may not be our most popular segment, but today I think it got officially ridiculous.
Oh, I think it's been officially ridiculous, but I think that today is the day that it crossed over into absolute self-parody.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, my argument from the very beginning has been, because I think that obviously, you know, man, power to the people. I think that there are obviously some issues going on at Mizzou that deserve to be confronted, and there was obviously an action on the part of the administration. So the anger is understandable. Mm-hmm. But as expected, it's now degenerated into something else, into self-parody. Yeah. And my argument from the very beginning was, you say you're fighting because these things have been done to you that are awful. And again, I believe that. But when after a couple of days, what people start seeing is you're throwing journalists out and you're saying, I have to have my space because this guy with the camera is making me feel unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
That lets somebody outside look at you and go, oh, wait a minute. Maybe this thing that you said that was scaring you was a phantom just like this shit. Yeah. 'Cause maybe you're just a fucking snowflake. And you can't handle anything. Maybe what was going on there wasn't that serious, even though it was.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would have been careful from the very beginning that the whole thing didn't descend into farce. And it's kind of descended into farce.
Yeah. Now, what happened today exactly? There was
There was a group of black students who threw a group of, or you know, ejected. I don't want to say threw out, but ejected a group of white students, white allies, saying that they needed to create a space that was for black healing.
Yeah, so it was a black only.
Now they've segregated. Mm-hmm. And they've created a black safe space and a white or an everybody else or whatever, a white safe space. Yeah. Because this is how fucking stupid identity politics works. You know, no one can be together. It has to be, oh, you know what, I've got my own little thing. So, and by the way, again, I'm not a person of color, so I don't pretend to know what exactly it is that they go through on a day-to-day, you know, on a day-to-day basis. But segregation is – people fought so hard to end segregation.
Yeah.
And to think that these kids are like, you know what, we need our art space to heal on our own is just, God damn it, that's stupid.
Yeah. Well,
and then on top of that, you've got, who was it? It's the student VP, I think, the vice president of the student, you know, the student group or whatever the hell it is, mm-hmm. of Mizzou, who I don't know why, I think it was a couple of days ago actually, while everybody else was paying attention to Melissa Click and that group of students, you know, roughing up and intimidating the journalists. Mm-hmm. But apparently she did an interview where she said, I'm looking at the quote here, where she, you know, they asked her about, well, look, is the environment you're creating becoming a place of censorship and prohibition?
Yeah.
And her response was, and I'm quoting here, "I personally am tired of hearing that First Amendment rights protect students when they are creating a hostile and unsafe learning environment for myself and other students here. I think it's important for us to create that distinction and create a space where we can all learn from one another and start to create a place of healing rather than a place where we are experiencing a lot of hate like we have in the past." So, you know, I don't like taking quotes out of context, mm-hmm. but it sure as fuck seems like what she's saying, in hilarious irony, is that she is against the First Amendment because it allows other people to make her and her students, the other students, feel unsafe. She says this even though her right to protest comes from, and to speak her mind, comes from the First Amendment. I mean, it's just – I get it. Look, I get it. They're fucking kids. They're dumb kids. They're going to grow up out of this crap. They're going to hit the real world because you know what? I was a dumb kid too. I was one of those – you know, when I was in college, I was one of those, you know, fight the power type people. I really was. But, you know, I was to some extent. My mind went as far as trying to rile people up on the radio. But I was very – there were times I was really fucking vehement about it.
Yeah.
And you get old and you start seeing that, like, you know what, look, there's nuance, there are gray areas here in between. It's, everything is not all black and white. But the problem with this, and this is the thing that we've been talking about for a while, why it shouldn't be dismissed as just a, oh, you know what, these are just kids being kids, is that because of this, the authority that they have right now, and because of their power through social media, they have what Jonathan Chait says, called the other day, an ability to create a political hegemony.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing. You know, they're getting people fired. They're having people resign. And you know what? Some of them might deserve it. But kind of like the tasering thing, I'm not trying to draw too many parallels, but when your first reaction is to go to the absolute nth degree,
yeah.
Your first reaction is you've got to be fired. You have to be fired. You know, screw that, man. You can't – no. You know what? Fired. You said something I don't like. Fire, 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 fire.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
You see the professor who had to who just voluntarily resigned?
Because yeah. He didn't – they. I don't think they accepted his resignation.
No, they
yeah.
didn't.
Yeah. He made a – he sent out an email to his students saying, you know, class, I'm not going to cancel class. There were some threats made on campus. Everybody so far, the police who've arrested people who've made the threats so far, they're way the hell, they're nowhere near Mizzou, as expected. Mm-hmm. You know, and of course there are going to be people, they're going to be assholes who call in threats, they're going to be assholes who make threats on social media. Jesus Christ, no matter, if you're a woman, you get threats on social media all the fucking time.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, obviously there's some fear on campus. I know that the school president, who by the way is a black gay guy,
if your school has that many issues, I'm wondering how the hell you elected a black gay guy to head your student government.
Oh, God, yeah.
But anyway, I mean, look, regardless, the other night he was circulating this information that the KKK was on campus and everybody had to stay away from their windows and that he was liaising with the National Guard, which is like, dude, you're the head of student government. You're not liaising with the goddamn National Guard. But it turned out, not long after, he had to retract that, whether he just jumped the gun or whatever. And what I'm saying is, I don't know how great the threat on campus genuinely is, but this one professor, apparently a very well-liked professor, very popular professor, sent off a fired off an email to a student saying, look, you know what? You give in to the bullies win. Yep. So I'm going to have the class. If you feel like you're really not going to be safe, you don't have to show up. But I'm going to be here. We are going to have an exam. I'm going to be here. I'm going to be, standing my ground, so to speak. And it's your call. I made my decision. It's your call. And I think, obviously it was supposed to be sort of a defiant, inspirational kind of thing. Like, don't let them win. Yeah. Maybe a little bit tone deaf considering.
Yeah.
But I mean, people just lost their minds.
Yeah, they did.
People sent him emails that said, we're going to take your job. You're racist. And it's like, holy f-. And because of that, because of his, I assume him, from what he describes anyway, feeling bad about it, feeling like, once again, the campus has to heal because of something he's done, which was fucking nothing.
Yeah, no, it was nothing. It was absolutely nothing.
He turned in his resignation.
Yeah.
Thankfully, they didn't take it.
I mean, again,
but this is the sort of atmosphere on campus. This is the sort of, it's oppressive now from both sides.
I mean, I understand that what I'm about to say is exactly, I think, what I'm being told to do, which is, I think what we hear a lot from especially the Black Lives Matter movement is that we just need to listen. Well, I'm listening and I'm trying to understand. I really, really am. I'm trying to understand why the overreaction, and maybe referring to it as an overreaction shows that I don't understand. But from where I'm sitting, albeit as a middle-aged white guy, I don't understand why this is happening, and no one has adequately explained it to me. Why this is now the epicenter of everything.
And I'll tell you something. There's a thought, by the way. My God, go on Twitter. Whenever the Twitter battles start, you will hear people say this. Yeah. There is a thought process that says that even though you're someone who is very liberal and who just was very reasonable and who operates in good faith, there is this thought process now, this philosophy that says that it's not anyone's job to educate you.
Exactly.
And then it turns into yelling and screaming. And it's like, one of my biggest arguments always has been, there is a difference between somebody who you know is your fucking enemy and somebody who is not, who is coming to you in good faith saying, look, I'm sorry, but I don't like what you just said. I don't get this, and no one's really explained it to me.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, the response, if you said that on Twitter, the response you would get everywhere is, I don't have to explain it to you.
Yeah,
you should just know. You should know.
Exactly. You should listen. That's the response.
Listen.
Just listen.
Oh, okay.
And say, well, I'm just trying to understand. No, listen. It's like the Dr. Evil thing.
Yeah, no, you're not, you can't, yeah, your opinion doesn't matter. Whether or not you truly comprehend what's going on doesn't matter. Whether you even understand what all the buzzwords are doesn't matter.
So set aside your opinion on this, and I'll set aside my opinion on this, because I think, frankly, that we both agree on this. If you were to look at this completely with as much objectivity as you can.
Right.
What exactly is causing this? What precipitated this? And is the reaction far exceeding the thing that precipitated it?
I think that there are major problems. I think that there are major problems in this country. I think we are seeing black people being shot, which, by the way, I don't think that there's an increase in it. I think we're just seeing it.
It's just more visible.
Which in some ways is much more daunting.
Well, look, Garland Nixon, who's an African-American commentator, Fox News Channel. He's also liberal. He's one of the liberals on Fox News Channel. Completely agrees with you. Yeah. And in fact, I went in saying, well, there is an upswing. And he said, he corrected me and said, no, I think it's always been this way, because he used to be in law enforcement. It's always been this way. And we're just seeing it more now because of the prevalence of social media and YouTube.
We have social media. Everybody has a camera in their pocket. Exactly. Yeah, we live in the panopticon now.
Right, right.
But yeah, I think it's that. And you know what? And to some extent, man, to a very large extent, the arguments are absolutely right. I mean, you know, when you have police brutality and people not giving a shit about black lives, about what happens to black people. Yeah. And I do think, by the way, that I think that that a lot of cops, I think it's just a power trip regardless. But I think black people get the brunt of it.
So
I don't think there's any doubt about that. But what my issue is, there's a difference between that and I wrote about this the other day. There's a difference between that and some kids on campus. And if they're pissed about that, and if that's part of it, then that's one thing. But there's a difference between that and saying like what happened at Yale. Yale was such a great example where somebody wasn't shot. Somebody wasn't hurt. A woman wrote an email that they didn't like the language of, that they didn't feel they should even have to deal with. You know, I can't even with this. I love that term. I can't even with this.
Yeah.
That's such a wonderful social justice crusader term. I hate to use that term too, but it's just true. Oh, I can't even with this. You know, and I think that the reaction to that, to hearing anything, just means yelling and screaming and trying to shut down the things that are upsetting them. And the really, really infuriating thing about that is that kids today don't have it that bad. They have been taught their entire life that they are special. You know, their whole lives, it's been like, you know, look, you're the best thing in the world, and you're, you know, so that anything that upsets that, they lose their shit over.
Yeah.
I mean, my God, it's so shocking to think of what college activists went through back in the 60s and the 50s. You know, the name of this group, the name of the protest group at Mizzou is Concerned Student 1950, and that's a reference to the first year that black kids were admitted to school. Mm-hmm. And I wrote about it. I said, can you imagine what those 9 kids who were admitted to school as black students were, what they had to go through every fucking day in 1950? And now it's, you know, we move from that to, you said something I don't like, so I'm going to go to a room with puppies and Play-Doh, and I'm going to scream that you should be fired.
Yep. I mean, on one hand, it's very college. I mean, I remember when I was in college and there was a lot of this sort of, I don't know, for lack of a better term, sort of kumbaya kind of protests organized on campus. And it was in some cases an overreaction. Other cases, it was a lot of I'm speaking specifically of when I was in college. It was a lot of play acting protests. Because that's what you do when you're in college. You learn how to do these things. What I don't get, though, is the drive to shut down understanding, to ostracize allies. And that's why I'm bringing this up today.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. There's the go-to response now, the immediate response is, you're the outrage is turned up to 11 all the time, no matter who you are. Even if you're somebody who can go and say, look, you know what, I'm on your side. I've been on your side for a long time. But it's like, no, you know what, just listen.
Yeah, listen.
Oh, okay, I get it. I get it. But can we have a discussion here? Can we all sit down and talk? No, just listen. You know, white privilege. Okay.
Yeah.
All
right. White fragility. That's the other one.
Yeah, that's right. I love that. That's such a wonderful turning this whole thing on its head. That somehow asking for a discussion on this, or saying, look, you know what? I just have a different opinion than you. I happen to support a large quantity of what you're doing, but I have a difference of opinion. Yeah, the immediate response to shut it down. And that's the whole thing. It's all about shutting it down. And throwing out meaningless buzzwords so that in the place of actually arguing, in the place of actually making a real point, it's just about, oh, you know what, you're obviously you're white people are so fragile.
Like, look, I got news for you. I'm not the person sitting and screaming at somebody because they said two words I don't like.
Yeah, exactly.
Two words that make me unhappy. And I'm not the person going and crawling into a room with puppies, puppy videos, Play-Doh, and coloring books and blankets on a fucking college campus. Mm-hmm. I'm not the one doing that because on the other side of the campus, somebody is having a debate about rape culture. And just the knowledge that that's happening on campus is enough to send me into a downward spiral of sheer lunacy.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, again, getting back to the question, what exactly started this? I mean, let's completely rewind back to the beginning and get a sense, again, painting the picture of why this has become such a thing. Why, you know, they're attempting to end careers and...
I think that social media gave marginalized groups power, which, by the way, nothing at all wrong with that.
Well, so, I mean, specific to University of Missouri, like, what started this protest?
Oh, well, what started the protest was a series of, I mean, first of all, there have apparently been issues involving racism on Mizzou's campus for a while.
Yeah.
And apparently there were three or four issues which, you know, conservatives are arguing with. They're saying, look, there's no proof that this happened. And admittedly, you know, there's a report on some – somebody apparently drew a swastika in his or her own
yeah,
in a bathroom,
yeah.
Which is f***ing crazy. You know, and conservatives were debating the veracity of that story, and it turns out – or questioning the veracity of it. And it turns out that there is a police report on that. But yeah, there are certainly, you know, other things are just one person's word. With, you know, with admittedly one of the accusations that I think it was somebody, a bunch of kids in a red pickup truck or something drove by off campus and yelled racial slurs at somebody. And that was a story that was told by the class president, the guy mm-hmm. who again said that the KKK was on campus. So, you know, whether or not to trust that, I don't know. I don't. I'd like more proof. But honestly, it doesn't mean shit anyway. Look, if there are racial problems, there are racial problems.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, I'm hoping anyway that there was a legitimate reason for this anger. But I think it's now kind of descended into just a show of power and self-parody.
Right. And that's what really concerns me. And that's what we sort of touched on Tuesday. What worries me, I can say it bothers me, but it worries me, it concerns me that otherwise valid activism, of activism that we need, is being skewed off into some weird other realm that is incapable of being grasped by people who would otherwise be allies to that movement.
Yeah.
And I don't know if walling off the activism into its own little sandbox is particularly smart.
I don't think so.
Nor is
but
it.
That's, you know, but that's me.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Is this actually working? Is the movement on campus at University of Missouri drawing people in and saying, you know what? They're doing this right, and I want to listen to what they have to say.
No,
I do want to listen.
I actually don't think it is. I think that it's only popular. It's only a thing with a very small segment of this, you know, this sort of millennial activist, you know, this millennial activist crowd.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, look, you know what? You can get people fired. Maybe that's progress. I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think that progress is getting, you know, getting everybody on your side, having everybody look and go, oh yeah, you know what, look, this is injustice and this is awful, instead of having it turn into, we're going to intimidate student journalists, no less. Jesus. Student journalists of color, no less.
Yeah.
Now we're going to intimidate journalists and now we're going to hold ourselves up and we need our safe spaces. That's just such no, you don't. Fight, you f***er. You know, if it's that important to you, then stand up and don't be running off. You don't need a goddamn safe space. You really don't. The world is not that fucking hard.
Well, also you can't.
I mean, it's difficult. I immediately regret saying that because I get it. I'm a white guy, but
you know, you're not at the moment with these students are not dodging bullets. You know, there's no need for a safe space. In fact, they should be inviting they should be inviting everyone in. Look, you know what? Everyone's a part of this.
Exactly. You can't change minds from a walled off bubble.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. Look at Fox News Channel. You think Fox News Channel is changing anyone's minds?
No. They're speaking to, but that's the other thing. This is a social media phenomenon. And as long as they're getting harumphs from this sort of social media crowd that's very loud, I'm not sure that they understand that people outside are going, all right, look, this is kind of and I don't they may not care, because I think that they think that anybody, they've already proven it, that anybody who opposes them, anybody who outside of the bubble that they're creating, outside of the safe space, who says, look, guys, this is, you know, I need some help with this. Oh, racist, you know, or, you know, oppressor or whatever the hell you are today.
Okay.
Yes.
And I'm not saying this with any snark or any sarcasm, but the fact of the matter is that we're a couple of white middle-aged guys, and we're not going to quite get it. But I think we've both been around long enough to kind of know, I mean, just from a nuts and bolts textbook activism kind of perspective, that's kind of how I'm looking at this and going, how is this going to, I don't see this changing anyone's minds. I don't see this complete lack of outreach. In fact, the opposite of outreach, where allies are being, and this is why I brought it up on the show today, allies are being booted out.
Expelled.
You know, observing online, for example, people who are allies to Black Lives Matter, allies to the black feminist movement, being shouted.
Yeah. Dude, feminists are like groups of two.
Yeah, being shouted down and booted out. Where it's just, I don't know. Have your own little protest and see where it gets you with three people.
Yeah.
Because you're kicking all the allies out. All right, Postmortem Show is everything we didn't get to on the free show. See you then. Bye.